Hey, good morning again, everybody. Tom Hall with you here on Maryland Morning. You know, in the theater, some names are inextricably linked. Rodgers and Hammerstein, Lerner and Lowe, Gilbert and Sullivan. We turn now to a show at the Spotlighters Theater that gives us a glimpse of Gilbert before Sullivan became his creative partner. The librettist W.S. Gilbert wrote a musical called A Sensation Novel nearly a year before he began penning his magnum opus of iconic musicals with Arthur Sullivan. As far as anyone can tell, it's never been performed in the United States until now. The Audrey Herman Spotlighters Theater is presenting A Sensation Novel in a new edition created by my guest this morning, who has also directed this production. Michael Blum joins me today in Studio A. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Tom.
It's nice to see you. So give us a rundown of just what this show is about. What's a sensation novel?
A sensation novel is what we would call a romance fiction or an adventure fiction. It's very much still with us in summer reading books and the things you find in airport bookstores.
So these are the bodice ripper?
The bodice ripper, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they feature extreme dramatic situations, rescues of the heroine from perilous fates worse than death, wonderful heroes who, of course, all get married to each other at the end. And this was very common. It was the major Victorian fictional form. Dickens, Trollope, Thackeray, Wilkie Collins, and many, many other writers flourished writing sensation novels, and they created many of the tropes that modern authors have used ever since. Gilbert, of course, who liked to satirize what was popular, took the overwhelming popularity of these and burlesqued them in this work, in which he turns it upside down. He takes a typical sensation novel and imagines that the characters in the novel come to life commenting on the ridiculous situations, overly dramatic and, of course, stock that they've been put into, and decide that things would be a lot better off if real life would interpose and govern what they do. So they eventually rebel against their author and against his will, force him to change the novel. And it's really very interesting. So what you get is reenactment of some of the hysterical scenes from the novel, which are quite over the top, and the characters themselves do it knowing they're over the top and commenting on it. And then you get to know these characters not as stock characters, stock cardboard creations, but as real flesh and blood people that I think by the end of this work you really get to like.
Mm-hmm. And in 1871, what form did this take, and what sort of source material did you have to do the edition of the piece that you've done now?
Gilbert wrote this as one of his works for German Reed's Gallery of Illustration. They called it a Gallery of Illustration because the theater was not some place that respectable people could go.
So, and German Reed was an actor and an impresario.
His name is Thomas German Reed, actor, impresario, composer, performer, comedian, piano entertainer, sort of a Victor Borge of all kinds of talents. He had put together a small company, and they did what they called illustrations, but they were actually musical plays. So you could take your family to an illustration, and you weren't going to the Wicked Theater.
Ah, I see. So a little semantics there.
A little semantic. And Gilbert wrote, he began with some very outlandish, and he ended up using his own real great interest in what we would call topsy-turvy, and taking situations and turning them upside down and showing people in situations they aren't used to. Now, the trouble with doing it now is that almost all Victorian literature of this period is in rags and tatters at best. In this case, of the six works that Gilbert wrote for the German Reeds, only one survives more or less complete, and that's not this one. Mm-hmm. This one, almost all the music is lost. The actual script is also in rags and tatters because it was never published in a definitive edition. There are some lines where even editors and scholars aren't sure exactly what the line was supposed to be. So in putting it together, I fell in love with this piece when becoming familiar with it decades ago. Putting it together, one has to make a decision as to what line is which, how the drama flows, and what to do about the music. As it turns out, there are four songs from the original production that survived, and there is a modern British composer named Mike Nash who wrote a beautiful series of songs recreating sort of the Gilbert style from the period.
Mm-hmm. And we have a clip from the show that the production that you're doing of A Sensation Novel. This is one of the pieces by German Reed. It's a duet.
Oh!
catchy title with Rage Infuriate I Burn.
Yes, in which the demure, shy little governess pulls a knife on the wicked, pantherish Rocalda and demands she turn over all her jewelry.
There you go.
And it's the highlight of the show. It's in the middle of that show.
And that's one of only four songs that survived, so Mr. Nash had to write the rest of the songs.
Wrote the rest of them. And they overlapped a little bit because when he wrote his version, which was 15 years ago, he wasn't aware of three of the surviving songs. So he ended up with doubles of several of them, which we worked everything into the show. Mm-hmm. Erica Rome and I, Erica is a brilliant accompanist, musical director, musician, and we worked all the music that we had. And I don't want to make light of that because Gilbert wrote this as an old-fashioned melodrama, by which I mean he indicated where in the musical scenes he wanted full musical underscoring. Mm-hmm. This is something that doesn't happen very much in Gilbert and Sullivan, but it happens all the time in this.
So speaking of Gilbert and Sullivan, why did it end up being Gilbert and Sullivan and not Gilbert and Reed?
It was accidental. Reed had a terrible injury about a year after this and retired from the stage. Gilbert and Sullivan were both the leaders of their respective professions, and there were many attempts to put them together. The first one that actually succeeded, as you said, Tom, was in December of 1871, which was an extravaganza named Thespis, which was put together for the Gaiety Theater by Hollingshead, John Hollingshead, the famous producer. And that was a Christmas entertainment, and it was medium successful. And it was only Doilycart who, years after, in 1875, was able to put together something that lasted. So I think, similar to Rodgers and Hammerstein, Rodgers wrote with Hart until Hart became unusable. And just like Gilbert wrote with many other people until he linked up with Sullivan. And their relationship, as everybody knows, was wonderful, but frayed way through.
And of course, it just shows yet again the role of serendipity in some of the great art of our time.
Absolutely so.
All right. Well, Mike Blum, thanks so much for coming in this morning and break a leg with the rest of the run.
Yes, we have six more performances, the 25th, 26th, and 27th of September, and October 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
We will have stuff on our website that gives all the details about that. Michael Blum is the director and driving force behind the Audrey Herman Spotlighters Theater production of a sensation novel. It's there for the next two weekends until October 4th, as Mike said. We've got link to details on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. That's it for us today. Coming up Wednesday morning, a new film examines a community school that might serve as a model for a new way to provide a range of social services in economically depressed areas. Amy Scott joins me to talk about her new film, Oiler. That's Wednesday morning right here on Maryland Morning. On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks very much for joining us. Have a great day.
Maryland Morning is an original production
of your public radio,
WYPR,
in Baltimore.
The show is produced by John and McCone.
We have production help from
Christy Forrest
and Scott Seiss.
Nathan Sterner directs and engineers.
I'm Tom Hall.
And I'm Sheila Cast. On this day in Maryland history, 1965, Assateague Island became Assateague Island National Seashore by federal law signed by President Lyndon Johnson. During the previous decade, there had been plans to develop the island as a private resort. 5,000 lots were zoned and sold. But the Ash Wednesday storm of 1962 wreaked such destruction, development was scrapped. So Assateague has just spent the weekend celebrating its 50th birthday as a national seashore, and today you can still get in on free entrance. We're back on Wednesday. Please join us.